If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody, good folks listening to RJ Hinder, and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also, it also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie, because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard, Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or you can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. And you can get all of this, the 100 cards, as well as the bumper sticker, as well as Aaron Russo's copy, From Freedom to Fascism, for $8. So take care of that. Got plenty of news, information, commentary, all that great stuff coming up in the rest of the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back, everybody. So, news out of Las Vegas yesterday, a substitute teacher, a female substitute teacher, was called in to teach class at a Las Vegas elementary school, K through 5 sort of thing. And the report was not entirely clear on a lot of specifics. However, I'm going to report to you what I have gathered and read between the lines. She brings in a little fanny pack of sorts, like a pseudo purse, you know, and a lot of women will take those little fanny packs and sling them over their shoulder as though they're a purse. Evidently, that got left, I believe, either in the office or in the teacher's lounge. I think it was left in the office when she was given her assignment and went off to class to teach. Well, when someone in the office found this thing, they started going through it, and in there was a small caliber handgun. Now, this particular substitute teacher, female, has a current concealed weapons permit. However, schools are gun-free zones. Okay, got it? Now, the reason that we know schools are gun-free zones is because when people feel like killing a lot of folks, schools are just one of the places that they will choose to go to commit as much atrocity and murder as they possibly can, because they know everyone there is an unarmed victim. So, as it turns out, the Clark County School District, that's the Las Vegas is in Clark County, Nevada. The Clark County School District, which is like the third or fourth largest in the nation. Most of the time when they get so big, they chop them up into smaller districts. No, not there. They have their own police department. And a police officer from Clark County School District was summoned. The whole thing was an investigation. So they realized that there was no criminal intent involved. This woman kept a small caliber handgun concealed on her person, well, in her bag of sorts, for personal protection. They realized that. They have not yet decided whether or not to charge her with bringing a gun onto school property, which is a gun-free zone. There is a law against it. It is my hopes that they do bring a charge against her, and that charge is fought so that law can be overturned and found unconstitutional. I don't believe this teacher did anything wrong, nor do I believe that this teacher should have, this substitute teacher, should have any sort of charges filed upon her. The reason is that law should not be in existence. That law simply disarms the public. Now, in some school districts in the country, the teachers can actually, with a concealed weapons permit and the approval of the principal, can carry guns on the campus. Actually, I'm not even so sure in Utah if you need to have permission. However, it is also a regulation within the school, each individual school district. In the state of Nevada, there is a law that says the principal of any school can authorize anyone else who has a concealed weapons permit to carry a gun onto campus. Now, you're never going to find a principal that says, okay, do that, because they have bosses above them all the way up to and including the superintendent, who very well may just override them and or reassign them to some other smaller nothing job, demote them, fire them, whatever it may be. So it's my hopes that this woman does get charged, and a number of pro-Second Amendment groups will rush to her aid and challenge this, the legality, the constitutionality of this law, in state court in Nevada. And hopefully get this thing overturned and set an example for other states that have the same ridiculous laws around the country. Yesterday, I spent basically the entire day in Las Vegas. We had a lot of stuff to do. My girlfriend and I had a laundry list of things to do. So we spent the day in Las Vegas. Now, I moved to Las Vegas in 1980, so I've been around there a long time. I've been in the area for pushing 30 years. In another couple of months, it'll be 30 years. With very little exception, I've been in the area. Now, I haven't actually lived in the Las Vegas Valley for probably 7 or 8 years. No, longer than that. It's probably been about 11 years. About 11 years ago, I left the Valley. And I just, you know, it's if I was living outside of the Valley, maybe an hour, but working in it, okay, I had plenty of exposure. Now, I don't work there, I don't live there, but I'll go into town for whatever I need, you know, whenever I need to. And I try to, like, gang a bunch of stuff together so I don't have to make the journey there and the journey back. It's about an hour there, an hour back, about 50 miles. So, not a big fan of having to go and spend the entire day, but we got a whole bunch of stuff done. However, not without a little bit of excitement, we're on our way out. One last stop, which was for dinner, Chili's. And we had stopped off at a theater at one of the casinos. The casinos seem to have some, not all the casinos have movie theaters, but some of them have very, very nice theaters. So we went to the Orleans Theater, and I'd never been to the theater at the Orleans, but there's 18 theaters there, and man, what a really lovely movie theater setup they have there. I mean, it's beautiful. The theaters are great. There's 18 screens there. It was really nice. Anyway, we went there and saw the movie 2012. If you haven't seen it, don't bother. I mean, the plot of the movie, it starts off with this whole thing about the, you know, the Mayan calendars and the Incas or whoever else believes that on December 21st, 2012, the world's going to come to an end. So that's the initial idea behind it. But then from there, they leave all of that behind and go off into this unbelievable craziness. You know, I mean, it was just way too many airplane stunts with just barely missing stuff, way overdone. A limousine, a recreational vehicle, a motorhome, and some other vehicle, I forget which. All of them had basically the same sort of jump to safety and wonderfulness, and the same airplane scene, I think, got handled three different times with a couple different types of aircraft. It's just way overdone. Come on, guys. The effects were okay, but the plot of the movie really sucked. And there were so many different little cliches. It was ridiculous. But if you want to go see it for the excitement of all of the movie magic, then see it on the big screen because that's a place to see it. But other than that, it wasn't worth the time. Anyhow, I'm walking into the theater. We've been doing stuff all day long. So I got me an energy drink. I got me a Rockstar. And there's, you know, some doofus sitting there taking the tickets. And there's a little sign that says, no, you're not allowed to bring your own food or drink into the theater. So, of course, my girlfriend oftentimes likes to see and say things out loud that should otherwise be kept to herself. So she goes, oh, look, you can't take that in. And then the guy, the kid, notices that so you're going to have to finish that out here. And I said, no, I'm taking it in there, and I'm going to finish it when I get inside. Oh, no, well, you know, right over here, you can say, no, kid, you don't seem to understand. I paid to go see the movie. You've got the ticket. You have the stub. I have the other half. I am walking past you into this area with this energy drink. And when I finish it, I'll deposit it in the closest trash receptacle on my way to the theater because it's a good two-thirds or three-quarters gone. He says, well, you can go ask my manager. I said, no. What can happen is when I walk past here, if you have a problem with this, you can go tell your manager. You know what theater we're going to be in. If they want to come kick me out, they can kick me out. Step aside. And he was just looking at me all confused. I said, you don't seem to understand. I don't ask permission to do what I want to do. I just do it. And if somebody has a problem, they can come find me. So I walked right past the guy. My girlfriend has, you know, come to learn this of me. Stupid rules that have no real reason to be in effect, I don't follow. I don't care. It's not for me. It's not my deal. So The reason they don't want you to bring a bunch of food and stuff of the air is because movie theaters only make money at the concession stand. Everything at the box office goes to the Hollywood movie companies. Movie theaters don't make a single red cent on the ticket price. They only make money at the concession stand. So once I learned that about maybe 3 years ago, I stopped complaining about the ultra-high prices of the foods and snacks and everything at the movie theater. So that's the only way they make money. I stopped complaining about it. I'm okay with paying those prices. I'm okay with paying $16 for a soda and $48.50 for a tub of popcorn now, because that's the only way they make money. But if I have an energy drink or a soda or something that is, you know, 70-75% gone, and I'm finishing it before I walk it, what's the difference if I finish it here on this side of the ropes or there walking to the theater? What is the difference? It does not cut into their money. If I bring a bag full of food and drinks, a cooler, a little rolling cooler behind me with a hibachi and a bunch of stuff to barbecue while I'm there, that's a problem. That was not the scenario. So, needless to say, nothing happened. But I just thinking outside of the box, realizing what the rules are for, some people don't even know. It drives me a little bit nuts. Anyhow, on our way out, we were driving to Chili's to stop and have dinner before we left the valley and came home. And I have to tell you about the situation with a police officer that I encountered right after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host right here on 2A Radio. I've been roaming around, always looking down
at all I see. My children were very
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us right now. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Okay, so yesterday when we are driving basically out of Las Vegas, one last stop. We're stopping at a Chili's kind of towards the edge of town and then heading back home, back to Pahrump. And I'm on a street. I'm heading south on Rainbow Boulevard at Tropicana. I don't know if any of you know Las Vegas. And, you know, I turned onto Rainbow off of Trop. I turned from West Rainbow onto South, West Tropicana onto South Rainbow. And as I'm driving, I'm up to speed. I looked out. I'm going 47 miles an hour on a 45. As a cop screams past me, I'm in the middle lane of three, screams past me doing about 60. He's in the right lane. Swings across my lane into the left lane without signaling to get up to the light at Hacienda and, you know, comes up to a stop. Now, this cop is not rolling code. I'm thinking, I wonder if this cop's on his way to a call because that's the only reason they should be driving like an ass like this. However, state law and department policy say you cannot drive like that without rolling, unless you're rolling code. You cannot violate the law unless you're on a priority zero call, which means rolling code 3, lights and sirens. So, and the reason he went all the way to left was because nobody was at the light in the left lane and wanted to be very first in line. Very common thing in Las Vegas is people will switch lanes when everybody will drive in one lane. And then at the moment that they start approaching a red light, it's this mad shift into other lanes because you might be three cars back in this lane, but if you switch lanes, you might only be two cars back in the next lane. Or you could be seven cars back in the left lane, but only six cars back in the middle lane, and only five cars back in the right lane, so swing all the way over. It's this really dangerous, crazy, stupid thing. So, when the light turns green, the cop guns it, shoots through the intersection, and swings all the way back across over into the right lane, thus cutting me off a second time. Alright, so I move into the middle lane. And from the middle lane, that now becomes the right lane. The right lane turns into a right turn only lane as you pass Russell Road, again, heading south on Rainbow. It turns into a right turn only lane. This cop doesn't care. He busts right through that right turn only lane, through the intersection, across a bunch of little stripes and eggs that they put there for people who aren't supposed to be driving in that area, and then whips into a shopping center. In there is another cop sitting in his car waiting at Taco Bell to have lunch. So, let's see. We have changing lanes without signaling, unsafe lane change, because I got cut off twice, speeding, changing lanes at an intersection, and failure to obey a traffic, a right turn only traffic control device, which the interesting thing about that is the same law that Jim Dunsing was pulled over for and eventually shot because he went straight in a right turn only lane. So this cop did the same thing. Now, there's been, usually Las Vegas Metro will go years, if not decade or more, without having an officer die in the line of duty, on duty. This year alone, in 2009, they'd had three die in the line of duty. One actually was just off duty, but they called it in the line of duty. The other two that were actually on duty, actually doing something, both were killed in traffic accidents where they were breaking the law. Driving too fast, unsecured, at night, without rolling code. That's a last, two of the last three deaths on Las Vegas Metro just this year were traffic accidents for doing the same sort of thing. So, I took it upon myself to compose a letter to the sheriff of the Las Vegas Metro Police Department. Dear Sheriff, no one needs to remind you that two of the last three officers killed in the line of duty were due to traffic accidents that were the fault of those officers. Evidently, that has not had the full effect on all of your patrol officers. At 8:25 p.m., 2025, as I put it, on December 9th, I observed Patrol Unit 10085 traveling southbound on Rainbow from Tropicana. The officer passed me at roughly 60 miles an hour in a 45, cut from the right travel lane across the center lane, effectively cutting me off, and into the left lane without signaling, and was approaching the red light at Hacienda. The officer stopped at the light, and when it turned green, he sped through the intersection, crossing back across all lanes into the right lane at an increasing rate of speed without signaling. Once he sped past Russell Road, the right lane changes into a right turn only. The officer disregarded that, continued traveling straight through the right turn only lane, and later turned into the parking lot, headed to another waiting officer at the Taco Bell at 5645 South Rainbow. Evidently, the hunger of this officer was so great, he decided to all but roll code 3 to get to lunch and violate several traffic laws in the process, even though two of his comrades have died in the line of duty doing the same sort of thing just this last year. Needless to say, I am disappointed and just plain mad that some officers subscribe to the do what I say, not what I do form of law enforcement rather than the lead by example. With that said, I would like to have the opportunity to sign the traffic citations for the citizen's arrest of this officer based on the multiple moving violations. Perhaps this form of justice is precisely what's needed to rein in unsafe officers and the actions they perpetrate, which are both illegal and violations of your department policy. There's no excuse for those sworn and charged with public safety and enforcing criminal codes of our community to blatantly disregard those laws. I await your response, Bill Carnes. I'm going to send this off along with a copy to the editor of the newspaper. More when I return.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The two-way radio show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back. Okay, so to just finish up that last story, I am going to send a copy of that letter to the sheriff via email, as well as to the editor, a letter to the editor of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, and see where it goes. I am happy to sign the multiple citations for this officer, and if they need a corroborating witness, my girlfriend was in the car. And so I am sick to death of police doing their own thing. if a citizen was driving the way that this cop had been driving, they would have gotten multiple citations by any cop, even the type of cop that doesn't stop people for traffic violations. It was so blatant, I was appalled. So I wasn't going to stop and confront the cop. No, I'm going to go over his head. Go over their head and see where this goes. So, that being said, here's another set of violations offered up by the Border Patrol. I am going to read this story to you. This was actually, this came out like late November, November 20th, I think it was. When Patagonia, Arizona resident Iris Cooper, 18 years old, turned her car around 2 miles before a Border Patrol checkpoint because she had forgotten her school books, she knew there was a chance the agents might stop her. What she didn't foresee was being allegedly forced from her vehicle and handcuffed for half an hour while agents waited for a canine unit, then searched her car without consent. Quote, "I was very polite and explained that I had forgotten my backpack for school," said Cooper of the incident that occurred just west of the Sonoita, in the morning of November 4th, she was going to class at Pima Medical Institute in Tucson. Cooper said that before she knew it, an agent had pulled her from the vehicle and handcuffed her. "When I asked the agent why I needed to be handcuffed, he said, it's part of the procedure." Okay. Cooper said she waited in cuffs for 15 minutes while a canine unit was brought to the scene in order to search her vehicle, even though she had not given agents permission to do so. "The canine unit went through my car, and there was nothing." Agent David Jimarez, however you want to pronounce that, a spokesperson for the Border Patrol, said agents more than likely thought they had pulled over a smuggler and that Cooper was cuffed for both their safety as well as her safety. Now, that's one thing that I cry total BS on. You don't cuff somebody for their own safety unless they're unsafe. You cuff them for the officers. "Oh, I'm going to cuff you for your own safety." Oh, why? Because if I'm uncuffed, you're going to taser beat me or spray me with pepper spray? Is that it? How is that for my own safety? Continuing, he said that oftentimes smugglers will try to run away if they think the vehicle is going to be searched. "The handcuffing doesn't necessarily mean that she's being placed under arrest," said Jimarez, referring to Cooper. However, Dan Pocahado, legal director for the ACLU of Arizona, told the weekly news bulletin of Nogales that 99.9% of the time such an act indeed would be considered an arrest. I like how he comes up with that number, so that's really true. Quote, "When you are handcuffed, that is effectively an arrest because you're unable to leave voluntarily," said Pocahontas, or whatever his name is. "From the information given, it appears that the level of force here would arise to an unreasonable seizure and violation, therefore, of the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution." Now, that I would agree. Just because you're part of the ACLU, I don't like you. That's just my own bias. Pocahontas said that Fourth Amendment rights protect citizens from unreasonable searches and seizures, no matter where they are. He said that while it appears the vehicle had enough suspicion to warrant an investigative stop, agents did not have probable cause for an arrest. I'll get into that in a moment. "I hope that the agents explain themselves as to why they did what they did," said Jimarez. He added that an apology is usually in order under such circumstances. Cooper said agents did not apologize, but they did tell her to, quote, "have a nice day." All right. Here's the deal. Border Patrol, it really pushes the limit at having checkpoints at anywhere other than ports of entry into the United States. That would be physical borders with another country, of which there are only two, Mexican border, Canadian border. Other ports of entry such as shipping. Other ports of entry, if there happen to be any trains that come across either border, they could stop them. I don't think that there are. And then the last would be international airports in the international area, where people fly in from other countries. That's it. They're really, really pushing their luck, and it's a regulatory deal, not a law, that they are pushing their luck with when it comes to setting up checkpoints at other than ports of entry. So that whole thing is rather suspicious. All right? So 2 miles beforehand, this girl turns around. So what do? Well, they just boogie on down and pull her over. Now, to stop somebody, you need reasonable suspicion. To arrest somebody, you need the next step up, probable cause. To convict somebody, you need the next step up above that, proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Okay? So, to stop someone, all you need is reasonable suspicion that maybe something might be going on. And there is a time limit. Police have 60 minutes from the point of contact, 1 hour, and that's it, to either conclude their investigation and let you go, or conclude their investigation and arrest you with probable cause. Not detain you further for any other reason. Probable cause. If they don't have it within 1 hour, within 60 minutes, it now becomes an invalid investigation. I want everybody to know that. If you are ever stopped, look at your watch, make a very clear mental note about it. If you got a stopwatch, start it. Because if they have you for more than 60 minutes, and let's say that they end up writing you a citation after the 60 minutes, you can fight that in court. There is no legal standing in order to do that. All right? For a reasonable suspicion stop, there's none. All right? After the reasonable suspicion of something else comes up and they then find probable cause, okay, then they can cite or arrest you. Then, again, to get convicted, you'd have to go in front of a jury of your peers and be proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. So there's many steps in this process. It is not a seamless transition, nor is it free of any fault. There are many guilty people behind bars. There are many guilty people who have gotten away, and there are many innocent people behind bars. So it is not a faultless system. So just so you understand how that works out. Now, with that being said, not a big fan of this type of thing. It's one of these deals where a lot of cops, and reasonably so, they live for the instant where they get to have something, really cool going on. Okay. It's like, it's a big deal. Wow. There's a little bit of an adrenaline rush, and they might go days, weeks, months between these calls. In some small towns, maybe even years, but they wait for it. That's what they really want to have done. And if they can't get it, they'll create it themselves, like chasing down this girl who turned around 2 miles before the checkpoint, who went back to go get her backpack. Something tells me she's probably late to school. Turning our attention to these idiots in New York City. They are now taking aim at illegal sales of realistic-looking toy guns. Now, here's the deal. In New York City, they have I'm not sure if I should call it a law. They have a municipal code which prevents people, retailers, from selling toy guns that look like a real gun. I don't mean look like as in, okay, yeah, that closely matches a Beretta or closely matches a Glock. It's also within the color. It has to be like orange, red, yellow, blue, something that is noticeably different than black or stainless looking that a gun would otherwise look like. Gray finish, something like that. So, what happens is a lot of kids will buy these guns and then they'll paint them black, which is also against the municipal code. On the other hand, a number of criminals will get a real gun off of the street and paint it red, or yellow, or blue, or orange. So now you've got fake guns that are painted to look real, and you've got real guns which are painted to look fake. And New York City knows this. They're aware of this. They know that by looking at a gun, they cannot trust it. Why? Because people who don't want to follow the law aren't going to follow the law and will go out of their way to break it. As in a case like this. Now, the first offense for selling a gun that too closely resembles a real gun in violation of the municipal code is a $5,000 fine. Second offense and beyond, an $8,000 fine. And after the second or third offense, I forget which, the store can actually be closed for up to 5 days as punishment on top of the fine. Now, as far as I'm aware, in most states, municipalities and their municipal codes cannot fine more than $1,000, nor impose a sentence of more than 6 months in jail, nor impose any sort of a sentence that would otherwise incur more than $1,000 in penalties, such as closing a store. So, they've now got this big campaign. The city's going to spend a lot of their own money on an ad campaign that's going to go on sides of buses and billboards and things like that. And they're going to show a black toy gun and a red, somebody who painted a red real gun. Now, my question is, who with the city that actually painted these guns is going to get cited for this violation? Because it's happening. Somebody at the city is painting a toy gun black in violation of the law and a real gun red in violation of the law. So I want to know who's at the city is actually going to get busted for this. And they're going to have these on the bus to say, which gun is the real gun? Why? Well, to raise public awareness for, well, anti-gun. So now we've got politicians spending the city's money on an ad campaign to try to win the hearts and minds of people over to being anti-gun, which is unconstitutional. So, taxpayer money is being spent to try to get the taxpayers onto the unconstitutional mindset of those in office who are being, that's right, folks, unconstitutional. Now, there's a story about this that comes out of the New York Daily News. And there is a poll, and it said, should realistic-looking toy guns be banned completely? Now, instead of yes, no, and I have no opinion, they have yes, they cause too much trouble, no, they're great fun for kids, I can't decide. I hate the commas afterwards. Yes, they cause too much trouble. No, they're great fun for kids. I can't decide. Hey, this is not the way it should go. As a matter of fact, as I click no on this, it ends up coming up that 76% of the people say, yes, they're too much trouble. 21% say, no, they're great fun for kids. And 3% say, I can't decide. Okay, so that's the way it's looking right now in this poll. Yes, they should be banned because whatever reason. No, because nobody's going to pay attention to this anyhow. Or I can't decide. I don't really care. I that should be a little bit more along the lines of how it should be worded. It drives me just a little bit bonkers when people do this sort of thing. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Are you going to arrest these politicians for illegally squandering your money? I would hope so. I would hope somebody would go in there and say, look, here's provisions. You guys are in what I believe to be my estimation, what I can try to prove in court, that you are squandering public funds. And for that, here's a violation of that law. So I'm going to citizens arrest all of you on this provision. Here we go. Hook it up. Let's go. What else are we going to do? What else are we going to do unless we start arresting people who are part of the public trust, part of the government? What are we going to do if we don't start arresting them for these sorts of violations. We're just going to continue to put up with this garbage. Now, I'm going to do my very best, my damnedest, to get this cop that I saw with all these traffic violations arrested. And by arrested, what it would be is it's going to be a misdemeanor citation. A citation is a courtesy arrest, as it is at least in that jurisdiction in Nevada and Clark County. A citation, if you can get a citation for something, you can also go to jail for it. So normally a citizen's arrest of a misdemeanor is something that the police will show up, write out a citation, and you, as the citizen's arrestee, will sign it. That's what I am going to push for when it comes to this. So, with that being said, that's where I'm going with this. I've had it. This cop was driving like a complete jackass, violating all kinds of laws to whatever effect. He was not rolling code, was not on a priority zero call, which means what he did was both illegal and against policy. So I'll certainly be letting you know how this turns out. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
All right, guys, a little bit of news and information out of the courts. Since the 1968 basically big federal ban on gun stuff and infringing on your rights, they call it the Gun Control Act of 1968. Well, a gun rights group has sued the Justice Department to overturn the prohibition, which became law as part of the 1968 Gun Control Act. And the case is now in front of U.S. District Judge James Robertson in Washington, D.C. It has to do with the ruling affecting out-of-state gun purchases. Now, you can buy a car from an out-of-state dealer and pick it up there and bring it back to your state. You can buy a house in another part of the country. However, you can't leave the state and buy a gun. Although the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to own firearms and presumably to buy them and have ammunition for them, but you can't buy a handgun when you're visiting another state. So this is a court challenge to that provision of the 1968 Gun Control Act. Now, narrowly speaking, the Second Amendment Foundation has filed the Hodgdon's versus Holder suit on behalf of American citizens who live abroad and would like to buy firearms when they return home for a visit because they can't, using the form 4473 when you buy a gun, that requires them to list what U.S. state they live in. More broadly, it could restore Americans' right to buy handguns while traveling across state lines as long as they undergo the normal federal background check, part of the Brady Law. The federal law says that, in general, it is unlawful for a dealer to sell a handgun, quote, to any person who the licensee knows or has reasonable cause to believe does not reside in the state, end quote. Rules for buying a rifle or shotgun are a little less strict. Now, attorneys for both sides have been arguing over whether the American expats have suffered enough harm to permit them to sue a legal concept called standing. Now, the Obama regime claims that they haven't, arguing in a brief that, quote, the plaintiff's vague allegations of an intention to acquire a firearm on some future visit to the U.S., does not give rise to a live controversy as required by Article 3 of the Constitution. In response, the Second Amendment Foundation points out that the expats who are living abroad tried to purchase firearms in the past but were denied permission. So it does go by Article 3 of the Constitution. We'll see how this goes. This will be an interesting little rally cry because obviously it appears to me to be unconstitutional. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. And Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thank you for spending your morning with me. Stay tuned for the Global Research Hour coming up next, followed by Ernest Hancock on RBN.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will Your Freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.